Hello and welcome to the Commander Theory Podcast. I'm Nick Beatman, and today I'm joined by Ben, who may be better known as DNA on our Discord server. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Nick. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So Ben is joining us today because we are going through the Doctor Who set review. And today we're going to be covering the two partner pairs in the set, as well as the standalone legends, of which there are very many. So tell us a bit about your history with Doctor Who. How long have you been watching the show?
So I got in with the reboot, so Ninth Doctor forward. I kind of fell off the show sometime in the middle of the 12th Doctor's run, so Capaldi. But I have to admit, seeing the cards and everything kind of made me want to go back and maybe finish out the rest of the reboot up to present day and maybe poke into some of the old Doctors, because some of the art and companions are really intriguing. I know you guys went through them last time, but just the idea of like companions from the past and stuff was really neat.
Yeah, I've also been revisiting some of the classic episodes that got referenced in many of these cards. So feel free to interject any of your knowledge or context from the show that will help us understand these designs as we go through them. Mm-hmm. But I think we can jump in, and we're going to start with the two partner pairs in the set. So the first one is going to be Amy Pond and Rory Williams. Amy Pond is 2 and a red for a 2/2 legendary creature human. She has partner with Rory Williams, so they can both be your commander if you pair them together. Whenever Amy Pond deals combat damage to a player, choose a suspended card you own and remove that many time counters from it. Doctor's companion. Rory Williams has a partner with Amy Pond. He's white and blue for a 3/3 legendary creature human soldier. He's got first strike and lifelink, and he has the last centurion. When you cast this spell from anywhere other than exile, exile it with 3 time counters on it. It gains suspend. Then investigate. So what do you think about this pair of partners?
Well, unfortunately, I think that as their own deck, there's not a whole lot here for me personally. I really like these two characters, and I think the cards illustrate well what they are all about. But Rory just is kind of a dude and not even really necessarily the kind of dude I want a Voltron. I think the coolest thing for these cards for me is that when you choose Amy Pond as your Doctor's companion, you essentially get a third commander because she always will search up Rory from your deck, assuming that you're playing Jeskai.
That is a neat little bit of flavor. Yeah, I'm also not super high on this pairing. Rory Williams, it is inconvenient that when you cast him from the command zone, he will become exiled with time counters on him. You can't just get him straight onto the battlefield easily. First strike and lifelink are not the primo abilities I think of when it comes to Voltron commanders. I really want some kind of evasion or protection. So he doesn't really do a whole lot other than periodically investigate.
Yeah, and when you... So I guess the game plan is what? Cast Amy on turn 3, suspend Rory on turn 4, hit somebody for 2. So then on turn 5, he comes in with haste. And that just seems really slow for a 3/3 first strike lifelink.
You could probably suspend him on turn 2, play Amy on 3, and then get him in turn 4. But then that's after combat. So you're still not attacking with him until turn 5.
Right.
So not highly compelling, I think. Do you want to move on to the next pair?
Yeah.
Okay. Next pair is Madame Vastra, which is 2 green blue for a 3/3 legendary creature lizard detective. She has partner with Jenny Flint. Madame Vastra must be blocked if able. And whenever a creature dealt damage by Madame Vastra this turn dies, create a clue token and a food token. Jenny Flint is 1 blue-red for a 2/2 legendary creature human detective. She has partner with Madame Vastra, first strike, training, which is whenever this creature attacks with another creature with greater power, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. And whenever you sacrifice a clue or food, put a +1/+1 counter on another target creature you control. What do you think about this partner pair?
I actually really adore these two. Part of that is because I enjoyed them every time they showed up in the show. Part of that is because just the idea of having a lure in your commander or command zone is really cool. The fact that the damage dealt is not combat damage means you can do a bunch of fun stuff since you're in red and blue, which are colors that have auras that give pinging and such. I think that there is definitely hooks to build around. I don't think these two are particularly powerful, but I think they will probably have a very fun play pattern.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting pair. Definitely very combat oriented, and both of these designs make you want to give these guys death touch. Like Jenny Flint having first strike, Madame Vastra forcing your opponents to block. Makes you want to run things like Bow of Nylea, which gives your attacking creatures death touch, or Oren Frostfang, which does the same, or like Sarith, the legend from Midnight Hunt. All of those just make these guys really lethal in combat. And then maybe you could probably do something with like clue and food synergies. There's, of course, like Academy Manufacturer and similar cards that just get you additional value as you're generating these tokens.
Yeah, and I adore non-creature artifact tokens, even when they don't do anything.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's something else we could do to just pump up the token generation.
I mean, you're in green, so you have... Is Doubling Season creatures only? Are those creatures only?
No, Doubling Season's everything. Yeah, Parallel Lives, I think that's everything.
Okay.
But I think that's just about all I have to say on Madame Vastra and Jenny Flint. Do you want to move into the standalone legends?
Sure. I have a feeling we got a lot of villains coming up. So first up is Wilfred Mott. He is 3 and a white for a 2/4 legendary creature human soldier. He has the ability Look to the Stars. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on Wilfred Mott. Then look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of time counters on Wilfred Mott. You may put a non-land permanent card with mana value 3 or less from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. What do you think about this?
Well, I'm not super high on this design. It seems pretty slow. I think that, like, even if you're running an incredibly high density of hits for this card, like let's say you're running 50 cards that are like permanents, that aren't lands, that are mana value 3 or less. Honestly, that's an unrealistic number. But even if you're doing that, then like first trigger, you got a 50-50 shot. Second trigger, it gets a little bit better. But it's like, it takes a while before you're like very likely to hit a card off of this guy. And yes, it survive on the battlefield for just a very long time. He, unfortunately, if he dies, he doesn't like keep his time counters. They're not, they just have to accumulate again on him. And I think most of the time travel effects are not in white. So there's not a lot of easy ways to manipulate your time counters and make things happen more quickly. I'm not super high on him. How do you feel about Wilfred Mott?
I'm kind of sad because Wilfred is one of my favorite characters from the show. He was always just kind of this a little bit unhinged seeming dude who knew about the doctor and was constantly on the lookout for whenever he would show up. And it kind of culminated in the episode where the Four Nox card, which I'm sure you'll get to in your main set review, occurs. Mm-hmm. And I just really enjoyed him as a character. And when I started reading this card, I was like, okay, I'm kind of into this. But like you said, the thing that really gets it for me is he doesn't keep the counters. When he dies, he resets. I don't find him very compelling as a commander. So I even tried to fit him into the Doctor Who deck that I'm making, which is the 9th Doctor. But even with 2 upkeeps, mm-hmm, at 4 mana, just wasn't enough.
And it is definitely like a major restriction to like warp your deck to up his hit rate.
That too, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next commander. We've got Danny Pink, who is 3 and a blue for a 4/3 legendary creature human soldier advisor. He's got Mentor, so when he attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on target attacking creature with lesser power. Creatures you control have, whenever one or more counters are put on this creature for the first time each turn, draw a card. So in the episode description, we have a link to a deck list. But I think this is a pretty interesting commander, potentially like a really unique play style. What do you think about Danny Pink?
Oh, I love Danny Pink. I have a attachment to messing around with counters on creatures and permanents. I believe when the Lord of the Rings set came out, I sent you guys a deck list for Goldberry, which just proves how much I adore counter stuff. So when I saw this card, I was like, oh, this is really fun. I'm here for turning all of my creatures into Fathom Mages. One of my favorite cards from the Return to Ravnica era.
This is, I think, a really great commander. So just to note, like, if you play a creature that enters the battlefield with +1/+1 counters, that counts as like putting a counter on a creature. So just like playing, you know, your Arcbound Worker or whatever is going to trigger Danny Pink. And there's just so many creatures in this color identity that enter the battlefield with counters on them.
I did not know that. That makes sense, though.
There's also a lot of creatures out there that like put counters on themselves as like when common triggers occur. For example, there's cards like whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put an oil counter on Ichor Synthesizer, or like Mercurial Spell Dancer, Surikara Spellblade. All of those add counters to themselves when you cast spells of a certain type. So there's many ways to trigger Danny Pink. There's these cards that kind of only do their thing once, like Arcbound Worker, and then there's cards that can trigger multiple times over the course of several turns. So it just seems like you're able to flood the board with a lot of just like dorky creatures, keep your hand stocked up, draw into like your interaction. Seems like a really fun deck. I'm not 100% sure on what the win condition is. Like, you're in a blue color identity, you don't have a lot of great ways to pump up your creatures, but you certainly get to play a lot of Magic. You're playing a lot of cards, you're drawing a lot of cards, you're doing a lot of things on your turn, and that seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, taking game actions, my favorite thing to do. Since he is blue, I guess your best bet is probably to eventually win with some sort of combo. You're drawing a lot of cards, so.
Sure. All right, do you want to move on to the next commander?
Yeah. So the next commander is Osgood Operation Double. They are a legendary creature human alien shapeshifter for 2 and 2 blue, and it's a 2/2. When you cast this spell, create a token that's a copy of it, except it isn't legendary, and it has tap, add colorless, spend this mana only to cast an artifact spell or activate an ability of an artifact. And then its last ability is Paradox. When you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, investigate. What do you think about Osgood?
This is an interesting commander. I was wondering if there's something you can do with like playing a lot of artifact creatures and playing like Intruder Alarm. You have your 2 mana dorks essentially in the command zone. You cast your artifact creature. When the artifact creature enters the battlefield, you get to untap your guys. And you can also like use additional clone cards to make more Osgoods since the token isn't legendary. That might be something. But of course, it is difficult to find Intruder Alarm in a mono blue color identity. So that might limit how consistently you're able to follow that game plan. What kind of things were you thinking of for Osgood?
I really like the design of Osgood. The idea of a commander that comes down and makes a copy of itself is really cool. I love making clues from casting a spell anywhere other than your hand, because there's a lot of hooks to hang on that, especially in blue, mm-hmm. with instant sorcery stuff and the graveyard and exile, etc. The fact that you'll make 2 clues because she'll make a copy of herself, is really cool. They add enough mana to crack a clue by themselves. Honestly, though, this looks like a 99 card for me. I would put this card in my clue decks and my food decks and stuff just because it seems like fun. But I just can't see myself building around it. I think maybe it could have cost 3 mana, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 4 is a bit much, even for two guys that together tap for 2. You might be able to do something with Urza, like mono blue Urza, just like using your clues to tap for mana and then activating his ability to cast spells from exile. That could be like sort of a self-feeding engine.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but I agree that this is not an incredibly powerful commander.
I do hope they come back to this space, though, because I do think the idea of a commander that comes in and duplicates itself is just really interesting to me. On to the next.
So up next is Iraxa, Empress of Mars. It's 2 red-red for a 5/4 legendary creature, alien warrior. She's got trample and battle cry, which means whenever she attacks, other attacking creatures get +1/+0 until end of turn. And she has paradox. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, create a 2/2 red alien warrior creature token. So what are some of the things that come to mind for an Iraxa deck?
So for Iraxa, how many ways are there to sacrifice a creature to impulse draw? Is it just the one goblin whose name I'm forgetting?
I think it's Dark Dweller Oracle, and I believe that's the only one, but let me confirm really
quickly. So that one is definitely really strong with her because you can just keep cycling through. But ultimately, I think that Iraxa is a really potent, uncommon commander. I spent a stint a few years ago playing peasant/pauper commander, where you pick an uncommon as your commander and the rest of the cards are commons. And this card would be a beating in that format. But I feel like if you're going to go with regular commander, you're probably better off adding green for Faldorn from Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
I think this goes in that deck, and Battlecry is very good if you're making a bunch of tokens.
Yeah, and doubling up on Faldorn's ability also seems pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
Just to add to some other potential like ways to convert your aliens into more impulse drawing and make more aliens, there's also Redcap Gutter Dweller from Wilds of Eldraine, which is an upkeep trigger. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may sacrifice another creature. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on this and exile the top card of your library. You can play it this turn. And then there's also Warehouse Thief, which is 4 mana for a 4/2. 2 tap, sacrifice an artifact or creature, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. So a couple ways to get some like self-feeding engines going.
That is good. There is more in that vein then. That's good to hear.
But overall, I think I agree that like if I was trying to do this thing specifically, I probably would just take the Faldorn and get the extra color and the one fewer mana in my mana cost.
I mean, Faldorn doesn't pump her guys, but she does. Doesn't she also let you impulse?
Yes, you can discard a card, I believe, to impulse draw.
She kind of feeds herself as well.
Well, I think with that, we can move on to the next one.
So this is Carvanista, Loyal Lupari, 4 and a green for a 5/5 legendary creature, alien dog soldier, that has vigilance, trample, and haste. Whenever Carvanista attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on each human you control. And then it also has an adventure, Lupari Shield. For 1 and a green, it's a sorcery adventure. Humans you control gain indestructible until your next turn. And then it does the adventure stuff. The sorcery speed on Lupari Shield makes me so sad.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice that it goes for a full turn cycle, but also like the fact that it's just like not reactive and your opponents are always going to know, well, okay, I just won't wrath this turn. That's a little annoying. I would much prefer my indestructibility granting to be reactive. And also, like, you're just not in a color identity that can really capitalize on granting everything indestructible. Like, you can't sort of plan to cast it and then wipe the board because there just aren't really any green board wipes. So that's a little unfortunate. It's still an interesting angle on human tribal. But I mean, it would be nice if I had maybe red to get extra combats or something.
Or white to make a bunch of human tokens.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few green ways to like add additional counters when she triggers. Like you can use Peer Imaginative Rascal or something, or like Hardened Scales. So there's a couple cards like that that can synergize with it. But yeah, you're right. There's not a ton of human token generation in this color identity. I just think this card wants to have like one or two more colors so it can really do its thing.
Gosh, I feel bad. I don't want to say I'm kind of down on the last few guys, but this one in particular, I mean, if you love adorable dog aliens, the Lupari are there for you. But I think that she's yet again another like good in the 99, probably not a commander kind of card.
Yeah, I think that the spicier commanders are perhaps weighted towards the second half of this section. As we get into more colors, we definitely see some more powerful commanders. Maintain hope, everyone is listening to this. We got some bangers coming.
Absolutely. So we have entered multicolor now with Sally Sparrow. She is 2 white-blue for a 2/3 legendary creature, human detective. You may cast creature spells as though they had flash. Whenever one or more other creatures you control leave the battlefield, investigate. This ability triggers only once each turn.
So casting ETB creatures with flash seems kind of nice. Like just being able to, you know, have my Sally Sparrow on the board and then pass the turn. And then depending on what my opponents do, I can flash in like a Skyclave Apparition. That seems kind of hot. Or even like flashing in a Sower of Temptation, like mid-combat could be really, really brutal. Seems like a lot of fun. There's a couple ways you can like trigger her repeatedly, like make creatures leave the battlefield really frequently. Salt Skitter is 3 and a white for a 3/4 creature worm. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, exile Salt Skitter. Return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So assuming people are playing creatures, and that can include yourself, you can just flash something in to trigger Salt Skitter, then you're just going to get a lot of investigate triggers over the course of a round of turns. Another thing that works pretty well is Fairy Artisans. So Fairy Artisans has this trigger. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, create a token that's a copy of that creature, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types, then exile all other tokens created with Fairy Artisans. So as long as, you know, Fairy Artisan is continually triggered, it's going to be exiling its old tokens, and then that'll trigger your Sally Sparrow, get you some more investigate tokens. That seems pretty good. Wavebreak Hippocamp is another card I really like in this deck. That is 2 and a blue for a 2/2 enchantment creature Horsefish. Whenever you cast your first spell during each opponent's turn, draw a card. So I think there's some fun tech for this commander. What do you think about Sally Sparrow?
I think that this commander is really fun as far as what you're going to do with it. I think you want to make sure that you can get value from whatever creatures you're flashing in. There is kind of a flicker sub theme going on. Maybe you can do some Cloudstone Curio shenanigans. That's the one where whenever a non-artifact permanent enters the battlefield under your control, you may return another permanent you control that shares a permanent type with it to its owner's hand. Basically, that will let you move in and out your ETB guys and make the clue tokens while you do so. I have flirted with the idea of making Afara, the blue-white god from original Theros block, more than once. And Afara's ability, she doesn't give flash, but instead she just lets you draw a card if you played at least one creature in the previous turn. And Sally is kind of like the other side of that, where she gives you the flash. I guess technically she's drawing you the card, but you have to pay an extra 2 mana for each of those cards. I think you definitely want to have some way to abuse the clues that isn't just cracking them. But I'm always here for a commander that gives my stuff flash.
similar to some of the other commanders we've been talking about, like when you're making this many clues, I think of Urza, Lord High Artificer. And then there's another card in this set. 500 Year Diary is 3 and a blue for a legendary artifact clue. And there's a battlefield tapped, and it taps to add blue for each clue you control. And then you can pay 2, sacrifice it to draw a card. So that's another way to just synergize with making a huge number of clues off of your commander other than just cracking them.
Shimmer Dragon, that's the one I'm thinking of. Tap your clues to draw cards without sacking them.
Yeah, that also seems pretty sick. All right, do you want to move on to the next commander?
Yeah, you want to read off Razzalon?
Sure. Razzalon, the War President, is 3 blue black for a 3/4 legendary creature, Time Lord Noble. He has, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life and exile the top card of your library. You may play that card for as long as it remains exiled. And each non-creature spell you cast from exile has Conspire, which means as you cast that spell, you may tap 2 untapped creatures you control that share a color with it. When you do, copy it, and you may choose new targets for the copy. What do you think about Razzalon?
I love this guy. Many years ago, I had a Wart the Raid Mother deck, and Wart the Raid Mother is pretty similar to this guy. She was a 6 mana green and red legend, and she comes into play with 2 green and red warriors, and then gives all your red and green instant and sorcery spells Conspire. So the same thing this guy is doing, basically, except that she's instant sorcery and he is any non-creature. And that deck was so strong in my playgroup that I eventually took it apart because people just didn't want to play against it. I think he is weaker than Wart, despite costing 1 less mana, because the ramp package and the red burn that you kind of finish with isn't quite as good. However, because he does any non-creature spell, he still can conspire all of the ramp package things that you have going on. So you have your artifacts for your ramp package that will get you to him. And then if you play them after he's there, becomes a little tougher there because they have to share a color. So the colored ramp options might be nice. You might want a painter's servant to make sure that you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can end the game with extra turn spells, drain spells like Exsanguinate. He seems like he can do some really powerful stuff. I think that his color identity makes him weaker than Wart, but conspiring your spells is really good.
Yeah, the only tricky part is just getting your cards into exile so that you can grant them that ability. So I think you're definitely going to be reliant on the black cards that exile things from your opponent's libraries and then allow you to cast them. So cards like Praetor's Grasp. There's also a new one from the Woe Precons fairy that's whenever you cast your first spell during each opponent's turn, look at the top card of that player's library, then exile it face down, and you can play it for as long as it remains exiled. That seems pretty darn good in a blue-black color identity because you're going to have a lot of instant speed interaction. There's just a lot of cards like that.
I do think that you probably want some top deck manipulation, like a scroll rack or spells like Brainstorm help, because you do get the 1 card during your upkeep each turn. So You can make sure that whatever thing you really need to conspire ends up on top to get exiled that way.
What's another good engine? Maybe like Mind's Dilation. It's a little expensive. 5 blue-blue for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent casts their first spell each turn, that player exiles the top card of their library. If it's a non-land card, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. So that could be a way to cast a lot of things with Conspire.
Especially if you end up copying it itself, because you'll get a token copy of it.
Oh yeah, that would be beautiful.
Be pretty sick.
So there's some fun things to do with this commander. At 5 mana, he's a little bit expensive, perhaps, but there haven't been a ton of commanders that are in blue-black that are playing in the casting from exile space. Do you want to read off this next commander?
Yeah, let's see what we got here. Ah, yes. The Cyber Controller. This is X blue-blue-black for a 3/3 legendary artifact creature, Cyberman. When the Cyber Controller enters the battlefield, each opponent mills X cards. Put all creature cards milled this way onto the battlefield, face down, under your control. They are 2/2 Cyberman artifact creatures. And then he has other artifact creatures you control get +1/+1. So everything that he pulls will be 3/3s as long as he's around.
This seems kind of sweet. It's a great reward for running lots of ramp. It can kind of like potentially feed itself a little bit, depending on like, you know, how many creatures your opponents are running and like what the hit rate is. You might be able to do something where you've got like an Ashnod's Altar or a Kark Clan Ironworks and you cast your cyber controller for a huge amount, get a bunch of guys, sacrifice them and the cyber controller and like cast him again. It's not infinite, but it is a way to just like mill a ton of cards, get a ton of like ETB and death triggers.
Would it be infinite with Phyrexian Altar?
Well, the thing is, it's variable. It depends on the hit rate.
Oh, that's true.
And there's not like a lot of easy ways to double up on the output.
Right.
So I don't think it'd be infinite. Depending on the hit rate, you can get a lot of things going on. I wish there was more like mass blink in blue, because it could be pretty sweet to just like blink the better creatures that you're stealing from your opponents and like basically turn them face up.
Oh yeah, Ghostly Flicker or Conjurer's Closet kind of style.
Sure,
the controller keeps it rather than it going back to the owner.
So that could be pretty sweet if you've got like the right type of blink effects. I think this seems like a fun commander. Like, it's got some neat hooks to build around. It's kind of a shame that, you know, you can't run many of the good like morph rewards in this color identity, and you just don't have access to green, so like you can't be drawing cards off of Kadena.
Here's some good tech. I think pretty sure Ixidor works with this guy if you want to flip your creatures up.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, Ixidor, Reality Sculptor, 3 blue for a 3/4 wizard legend. Face down creatures get +1/+1, so they'd be 4/4s. And then 3 mana for turn a face down creature face up.
Yeah, that seems like some really fun tech for this.
As a fellow Kadena enjoyer, do you think this makes the 99?
I would guess not. Just like thinking about the likely hit rate, like let's assume that your opponents are running like 25 creatures in their 99 card decks. So, and you cast this for, say, X is 4, so for 7 mana, like you're likely to hit probably one creature off of each opponent. So you're getting 4/4s for 7 mana, and you're milling 4 cards.
And you're drawing 3.
Yeah, and you're drawing 3. So it's like, it's not terrible.
It's an okay value play, but not really what you want to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that like with what I'm trying to do with Kadena is like not tap out, but really just like keep my interaction open. I want to be spending most of my mana for like I really want to play a Flash Engine. That's what I really want to do with my mana. And then just like keep mana open to like flip up my morphs in response to whatever my opponents are doing.
Yeah, I think the closest thing that I have to this in my Kadena deck is the big reanimator spell that pulls a bunch of guys from the graveyard.
Ghastly Conscription.
Yeah, that one. All right. Are you ready to move on to the next?
Sure. The next one is pretty spicy, honestly. This is The Master Formed Anew. It's blue-black for a 0/1 legendary creature Time Lord Rogue. He has Body Thief. Whenever you cast this spell, you may exile a creature you control and put a takeover counter on it. And then you may have the Master Formed Anew enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature card in exile with a takeover counter on it. So what do you think about the Master Formed Anew?
I think that saying he's spicy is a bit of an understatement. I don't know. He's such a cheap clone option. I love that he keeps whatever he body steals in like a library that he creates in exile, because they all have takeover counters. And he seems really good with flicker. You'll want some blue flicker in here, because it basically you create a toolbox by casting him over time, and then eventually you want to be able to swap between things. He seems really neat with Enter the Battlefield farming. There's probably some combo stuff you can do in here. Polynchron is the, or Great Whale, or any of the untap a bunch of land things.
Yeah, Palancron is definitely like the sweetest one, because it's just like kind of just one card by itself. That's all you need to do. Like, play the master, untap your seven lands, bounce the master, play him again. You know, you're netting a single mana each time. Great Whale is definitely good, but it requires like another piece to fully go infinite. You need like some other way to repeatedly bounce or blink him. But still, just like, you know, paying two mana to get seven, even if you're just doing that as like the value play and not comboing off, it's pretty sick, pretty solid.
Yeah, for sure.
Another really neat combo with the master formed anew is Cavalier of Night or Driver of the Dead. These are both creatures that when they die, you get to reanimate a creature in your graveyard of mana value three or less in the case of Cavalier of Night, or two or less in the case of Driver of the Dead. But if the master is a copy of one of those, then he can actually get himself back from the graveyard. And so he just provides infinite sack fodder in that case. So that's another potential win con for this deck.
I hope the listeners are ready. We're about to go through a ton of masters, kind of like Lord of the Rings had the, there's a million cards for a character. The master has like six cards in the set.
And a lot of them are pretty neat. We can maybe transition to the next one. Do you want to read this off?
So this is the Master Mesmerist. Two blue black for a 3/3 legendary creature, Time Lord Rogue. Tap, target creature and opponent controls with power less than or equal to the master's power. Gain skulk until end of turn. Goad it. Whenever a creature with skulk deals combat damage to one of your opponents, put a +1/+1 counter on the master and draw a card. And notably, this master is from the one of the earlier episodes with him. I don't think it's his introduction, but I think it's his second appearance, where he shows up as essentially a cult leader in like the 70s.
Interesting. So we have a link in the episode description to a deck list for the Master Mesmerist, if you want to see like some ideas for how to build around him. Unfortunately, there aren't a ton of creatures in Magic that just naturally have Skulk. There's really only like a couple handfuls. So I think if you're building around the Master Mesmerist, you're really like focusing on his ability and like trying to untap him a bunch, so that you can sort of get your card draw in that way. Notably, Pemmon's Aura and Freed from the Reel are both ways to just get a ton of untaps on him. You can potentially like goad an opponent's whole team without too much difficulty. Other things that work really well, like Sting, the Glinting Dagger. That's two mana for a legendary artifact equipment, equipped for two. And then at the beginning of each combat, untap equipped creature. So that's another way to get a lot of activations off of him. He seems pretty sweet, though. What do you think about the Master Mesmerist?
When I first saw this card, I was not particularly interested, but the more that I thought about it, the more interested I became. Blue is really good at untapping things, so it's cool to see a deck where that's kind of the focus, and you just kind of let your opponents kill each other. You'll definitely want haste or a 1,000-year elixir style effects to make sure you can get going right away. Mm-hmm. And you can just kind of hold up interaction to protect the master, and then the master protects you. So I actually quite like him on second digesting of his card.
Yeah, he's seems like a fun one. We did actually just see a new Skulk card in Wilds of Eldraine. That would be Ingenious Prodigy. So I'm hoping that means that Skulk might be back on the menu, and that we might see more cards to help fill out the Master Mesmerist's deck over time.
Yeah, even if you only get like one a year, eventually, you know.
Yeah.
If, as long as the card's quality enough, you'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next up we have the Master Gallifrey's End. It's two black red for a 4/3 legendary creature, Time Lord Rogue. He has Make Them Pay. Whenever a non-token artifact creature you control dies, you may exile it. If you do, choose an opponent with the most life among your opponents. That player faces a villainous choice. They lose 4 life, or you create a token that's a copy of that card. What do you think about the Master Gallifrey's End?
I don't know. I think this might be my least favorite master out of all of the master cards. It depicts him at his most unstable, and in the episodes that he's in, he really is like self-destructing, which is reflected, I think, in this ability and the fact that your opponent gets to choose. But despite being a flavor win, I don't know. We just had Bernard, and is there another card that makes copies of things that died? Maybe, I guess technically you could consider like Aetherios 1.0 to be kind of similar, because it's 3 life or you get the card back.
Sure. Bernard just seems like, I mean, it's different color identity, but it seems like a way better version of this effect. Like, you're just giving your opponents a lot of choice, and this, you just don't have a lot of control over this card. So not only does your opponent get to choose what happens, but you don't even get to choose like which of your opponents you're applying pressure to. It's always the person with the most life. So,
you know what? Until you read it off just now, I had not realized that, and it
it makes the card a lot worse.
It makes it even worse.
Yeah, because normally with a card like Aetherios, if you keep forcing the choice upon the same person, eventually their life is going to get down to the point where like it's a forced choice. They just have to give you the thing. But with the Master Gallifrey's End, like, it's always going to be the person with life to spare who's making the decision. So you're just very unlikely to get what you want out of this. And also, of course, like, you know, only triggers off of artifact creatures rather than Bernard, which just does everything. This seems like an incredibly like safe and weak commander, IMO. Let's move on to the next commander. Do you want to read this off?
Yeah, this is easily my favorite master. This is the Master Multiplied from the episode where he essentially takes over everybody in the world using this weird device, and they all get his head, and the actor just has a great time. He is a 4/3 for 4, a black and a red, legendary creature, Time Lord Rogue. He has Myriad, which means when he attacks a player, you create a token of him attacking each other player, and those tokens go away at end of turn. But he has the legend rule doesn't apply to creature tokens you control, and triggered abilities you control can't cause you to sacrifice or exile creature tokens you control. So what do you think about the Master Multiplied, Nick?
We have a list in the episode description if you want to check that out. I think he's pretty awesome. He's definitely expensive, so you got to plan around that. You got to run a fair bit of ramp in this deck just so you can see him reasonably early in the game. But, I mean, not only does he synergize with a lot of super fun cards, but just by himself, he can do a lot. Because, okay, you're going to want to get some haste granters down so that, like, you can start triggering him ASAP. The thing is, like, you know, you myriad with him, and because of his abilities, you keep all the myriad tokens. And then those myriad tokens, they themselves have myriad. So he's going to quickly triple the number of Master Multiplieds on the board every turn, or like every attack step. Assuming, of course, that your opponents aren't like killing him. You can run a lot of extra combat effects, like, you know, Combat Celebrant, Bloodthirster, similar cards, Port Razor, for example. And you can just multiply your masters a ton of times in a single turn. You can run other cards with Myriad, or the ability from Commander Legends that you can activate from the graveyard. It's on like
Encore.
Encore, yes, thank you. So you can run cards like that and then just get a ton of value off of your commander. Seems like a fun commander. seems very vulnerable to disruption. Like, I mean, he costs 6 mana the first time. If they are able to kill him before you really get going with him, then the next time he costs 8, it's kind of painful, but he seems very fun if you can protect him.
Yeah, kind of like the master himself. You must be a master manipulator to make sure that you know exactly when to deploy him so that you don't get blown out and then locked out of the game.
There you go. Any last thoughts on the Master Multiplied before we move on to some non-master cards?
No.
Okay. Next up, we've got the Beast, Deathless Prince. It's 2BR for a 6/6 legendary creature demon. Whenever you cast this spell, gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap it. It gains menace and haste until end of turn. The Beast enters the battlefield tapped with 6 stun counters on it, which of course means if it would become untapped, remove a stun counter from it instead. And whenever a creature deals combat damage to its owner, untap the Beast and draw a card. So we have a link in the episode description to a deck list for the Beast. And it really just seems like active treason.deck. You're just going to be running a ton of cards that steal your opponent's creatures temporarily, grant them haste, let you get in with them. And then you're going to be running a ton of sack outlets as well. Like, it just seems solid to have the Beast out, steal an opponent's creature, attack them with it. I mean, if they like chump block, then cool, you got a card off of them. If they don't block and it hits them, the Beast triggers, you got a card off of them. And then no matter what happens, you're going to be sacrificing that creature before the end of the turn. So I think that's just like enough value that Act of Treason's become good and you just run as many as you can.
I guess I kind of underestimated this card and the value it can generate. If you think that you're getting enough value out of that, you're drawing cards and whatever your sack outlet does, you're in the right colors.
Yeah, so. You're killing creatures. The counterplay to this type of deck, I think, is just to stop playing creatures forever. And if that happens, you might be out of luck. You're going to have a lot of dead cards, but hopefully you can win the game when you have creatures and your opponents don't, I guess.
Yeah, one would hope. Yeah, it's definitely a precarious thing. There are decks that this like goes really badly into. Mm-hmm. But I think, so I guess here's my biggest concern with the Beast is that the play groups that the Beast will be good into are also the play groups that I think will really hate having their creatures stolen, hit them, and then sacrifice so they don't get it back.
That's fair. That's probably true.
I mean, it is what it is. Sometimes you got to show them that you're the Deathless Prince.
Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, you talk about net fun for the table. If this play style is maybe not especially fun for your opponents, you just got to make sure that you're having a ton of fun. And then, you know, you might come out ahead.
Is that how that works?
That's how that works for sure. All right. I think with that, we can move on to our next commander. You want to read this guy off?
Yes, I would love to. This is the Dalek Emperor. He costs 5BR for a 6/6 legendary artifact creature Dalek. He has affinity for Daleks, so he costs 1 less for each Dalek you control. Other Daleks you control have haste, and at the beginning of combat on your turn, each opponent faces a villainous choice. That player sacrifices a creature they control, or you create a 3/3 Dalek artifact creature token with menace. So what do you think?
So I think the affinity for Daleks line is kind of trinket text. There's just very few Daleks in Magic. And I don't think that the reward of making your commander a little bit cheaper is enough to make you want to run like changelings that are then Daleks. So.
Oh, I didn't even think about changelings. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that like are relatively low cost. Like you can run a black market connections and just kind of get a couple changelings out there for free-ish. But I think for the most part, like you're not going to be able to get a ton of cost reduction off of just like Daleks in the 99. I think it's more that you're going to try to stockpile Dalek tokens using his ability. And then if he dies, well, he'll just come back out again.
So I'm looking right now. I guess there's only four cards that either make Daleks or are Daleks in his color identity. I think they're all probably worth playing just based on their mana costs and what they do for you outside of making 3/3 menaces. Yeah, but
some of them aren't bad. I really like the one that like ETBs and kills something and makes them lose life. That one's totally fine.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely want to play that one. There's the one that the saga where you like,
oh, that one
just can, make,
yeah, potentially make a ton of make Daleks.
Right. Cause it's like one and then two of them and then three of them. So a total of like six, mm-hmm. Although then you run into the villainous choice.
Yeah. And that one also like costs six mana. So it's like, well, if I, you know, play my six drop and then wait three turns, then eventually my, right, my seven drop becomes a lot cheaper. It's like, oh, I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Some fun things you can do in terms of making the villainous choice kind of less of a choice. If you've got like, you know, an attrition, then it kind of doesn't matter whether they sacrifice a creature or give you a Dalek, because you can just convert the Dalek into a kill spell. If you've got like Grave Pact or Dictate of Erebos, and I guess like another sac outlet, you can just make it so that if they give you Daleks, they end up sacrificing even more creatures.
So here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to get your thoughts. Which of the two choices do you want your opponent to make?
Generally, I want them to sacrifice creatures, because that's just like the direct path to value. I don't have to like have these other engines to convert my Daleks into value.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, what do you feel like?
I like that it gives your Daleks haste, so when you make the 3/3s, they're going to be able to attack immediately. Mm-hmm. And like you said, getting the 3/3s helps you recast the Emperor later if he dies.
Also worth noting, because this is a combat trigger, like this works really well with extra combat steps. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you just get more triggers, but he's also granting your Daleks haste. So in subsequent combat steps, if they like give you Daleks, then you can swing with those Daleks in the next combat step that you're getting off of your like Bloodthirster or Combat Celebrant or Port Razor or whatever the hell you're doing.
As far as Changeling cards, I think the only two I'd probably run in this deck is Black Market Connections and Maskwood Nexus. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that seems sweet.
I think those have enough side value that that they could really do something for you.
Yeah, no, that seems great. Like using Maskwood Nexus to make everything reduce cost for the Emperor, that seems pretty cool.
So I did want to add something because I went ahead and I looked up the ruling for it. So the way Villainous Choice works is they always get to choose either option, even if it does nothing. The Dalek Emperor, they can choose to sacrifice a creature if they have no creatures.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Really sad.
Yeah, that's kind of crappy that once they're out of creatures, it just doesn't do anything.
In the Dalek Emperor Gatherer description, it even explicitly says, a player facing a villainous choice can choose either option, even if one or both the options are impossible. For example, if one of the options is sacrifice a creature, a player who controls no creatures can still choose that option.
Okay, that sucks. That's awful.
Yeah, that's bad. Not a fan of that.
You know, I was low on the ability to start with, because why would I want to give my opponents a choice? It's even worse than I imagined. Good God.
You want to talk about the next one?
Sure. Strax Suntaran Nurse is 3 red-green for a 5/5 legendary creature alien cleric. He's got vigilance and trample. He also has grenades, which is 2 tap, sacrifice an artifact, choose a player at random. When you do, Strax fights another target creature that player controls. And he also has glory of battle. Whenever Strax deals damage to a creature, put a +1/+1 counter on Strax. What do you think about Strax?
As one of the characters that I love from the show, this card encapsulates everything that I adore about them as a character. As a card, the choosing at random, the fact that he can fight your own creatures on accident, it's funny, but not really what I want to do. He's got vigilance, so at least he can always swing in and hit somebody before you do that. Clearly, you're going to want some way to generate artifacts. I think he works well in the decks that are making a bunch of clues and food or whatever. You want that kind of generation in a deck with him, for sure.
Yeah.
I guess he goes infinite with anything that could help him remove a counter to deal a damage.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's one way for sure you could do it, and that is you use a creature like Apocalypse Hydra, and then you have the Soul Cauldron from the new set from Eldraine, because it's an activated ability to remove a counter. So, like, you get Triskelion in your graveyard or Monoskelion, and you Soul Cauldron it away, and then you can infinitely ping creatures to kill them all.
Okay. All right. That seems pretty sick. Seems more like a good commander for people who really like this character rather than something that's compelling for most people. I think most of the criticisms you mentioned, I agree with, unfortunately. I do like this next guy, though.
Sergeant John Benton. He is 1GW for a 2/4 legendary creature, human soldier. He's got trample and haste. Great start for Voltron there. Mm-hmm. And share intelligence. Whenever Sergeant John Benton deals combat damage to a player, you and that player each draw that many cards. Wow, that many. So pumping up his power, he'd just draw a bunch of cards, huh?
Yeah, seems really powerful. We've got a link to a deck list in the episode description. But I love that, you know, if you're killing somebody with Sergeant John Benton, then they don't actually get to make use of the cards you're providing. So I like this for a Voltron strategy. That's kind of where I went with the deck list. You've got some access to like pretty powerful green pump, just ways to give like, you know, +4/+5 power for very little mana. And then you just convert that into tons of card draw. White has some great protection effects, things like Lauren's Escape or Galadriel's Dismissal, Blacksmith's Skill, all are really good ways to protect him from opposing removal spells. And I mean, Trample, he's essentially got some evasion on him, haste, like he can come down swinging if need be. Yeah, I just think this is a great package for a Voltron commander. He just naturally does a lot of the things you really want your Voltron commander to do.
Have we finally found a deck that Alms Collector is like actually quite good in?
I think so. I think so. Yeah. I think Alms Collector, for those who aren't familiar, is 4 mana for a 3/4 cat cleric with flash. If an opponent would draw 2 or more cards, instead you and that player each draw a card. So that's a great way to like significantly reduce the amount of value you're giving away with Sergeant John Benton. I also like Smothering Tithe in this deck. Your opponent is almost certainly not going to be able to pay all the mana for it. So you just generate a huge amount of mana as you're generating cards. And well, hopefully you can figure out a way to victory when you've got a ton of both of those things. Do you have any last thoughts on Sergeant John Benton before we move on?
No, I think you covered him well.
Okay. Up next, we've got Vreston Monoptra Leader. X, green, green, white for a 0/0 legendary creature, alien insect scout with flying. Vreston enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. When Vreston enters the battlefield, create X 1/1 green and white alien insect creature tokens with flying. And whenever you attack with 1 or more insects, put a +1/+1 counter on each of them. What do you think about Vreston?
I mean, I like that it's a big flyer that comes with a bunch of flying tokens when you cast it. It's in green, white, the token colors. They can do a lot of stuff with tokens. I think that the last ability is probably not the one you want to build around, but there's probably some good insects that you can do stuff with. Hornet Queen and Scoot Swarm both make a bunch of tokens, so like they're kind of in theme. How about yourself?
I think this is a pretty easy reward to build around. You know, you can just run like Hardened Scales type effects. There's just a lot of those in this color identity. Not a ton of insects, unfortunately. But if need be, you can get some changelings in there. You can, of course, just like pump a bunch of mana into Vreston to get your aliens that or your insects that way. A little bit of a weird color identity for this in the sense that like insects have historically kind of been like a black green thing, but mm-hmm. I guess they're going with like, you know, the high, like a hive insect is technically very white in its philosophy. Like it's all about the greater good.
So I think in this case, they're pulling from the flavor because the Monoptera are, as you say, they are an incredibly community-based species of aliens that are essentially, if you put the Selesnya Guild from Ravnica into space and then made them kind of xenophobic, you'd end up with the Monoptera. So,
gotcha.
I think that color-wise, that's pretty much where they were coming from. And I mean, the card works. I think that if I was going to build this deck, there's two cards that I'd want to try and like shift my mana base around. The first one is Beacon of Creation, which is 4 mana, make an insect for each forest you control, then shuffle it into your deck. And since I'd already be trying to make a bunch of forests, it might be worth using the new Green Virtue to triple your basic land mana.
Sure, sure. That seems sweet. All right. I think with that, we can move on to our next commander. Do you want to read this one off?
I would love to. So we have yet another detective. Duggan, Private Detective, 2 green-blue for a star-star legendary creature human detective. Power and toughness are each equal to the number of cards in your hand. And when he enters the battlefield or attacks, you investigate. And then he has the most important punch in history. It's 1 and a green and tap, and he deals damage equal to twice his power to another target creature. Activate only once. So you get one removal spell out of him at some point.
Yeah, he's your one punch man.
Yes.
So one thing to note, of course, that activate only once. There are ways around that restriction. So if you have like a blink effect or a bounce effect and get him onto the battlefield, the game treats that as a new game object. And so you can then activate it again. So if you want to punch a whole bunch of times, you can just blink him and to get around that. Other than that, I don't have a ton of ideas for how to build around him. What are you thinking with Duggan?
So I saw this card and I love this card because both the flavor of it and the most important punch of history. It's a very funny card, but also because I have a Jahira and Crafter background deck, mm-hmm. which is blue-green, and Jahira lets you tap your tokens for green mana, and then the Crafter thing basically turns all of your artifacts into clues that also put a +1/+1 counter on a creature. And Lannis, this guy seems like a slam dunk in the 99 just because he comes into play, he gives you a token. Every time he attacks, he gives you a token. I've never had less than like 5 cards in my hand, so he's always going to be pretty big. And then at some point, you can smack something and kill it. Just seems good to me.
Yep, fairly straightforward commander. And I think with that, we can move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Up next is Idris, Soul of the TARDIS. It's 1 blue-red for a 3/3 legendary creature, human incarnation. She has Vanishing 3 and Imprint. When Idris, Soul of TARDIS, enters the battlefield, exile another artifact you control until Idris leaves the battlefield. Idris has all activated and triggered abilities of the exiled card and gets +X/+X, where X is the exiled card's mana value. So, what do you think about Idris?
In our notes, we have lists of examples of things with neat triggered abilities that you can work with. But I don't know. Vanishing 3 means that you get a few turns with Idris, and then she sacrifices herself, and you get the artifact back. But then it just feels like she replaces the artifact, so why were you going through this trouble? It's not like you're doubling up. I guess I just don't understand the hook that this card's trying to say, other than the obvious flavor stuff going on.
Yeah, I'm of the same mind. It doesn't seem terribly different from just having the artifact in play. I'm wondering if there's something out there that like, will some artifact out there that will have like a slightly different effect if it's, if the ability is on a creature rather than on an artifact. But I don't think there's a lot of cards like this. So yeah, it doesn't seem very interesting to me. I hope the flavor of it is fun for people.
I mean, the flavor is on point, right? Because this is the soul of the TARDIS, and she can like assimilate other artifacts into new things and such. But
maybe you can do something with like affinity cards, something, or some other ability that like greatly reduces the effective mana cost, but like gives it a really high mana value. So, you know, if you have your like Mirror Enforcer or whatever, but you have so many artifacts that you only pay 3 for it, and then you play your Idris, then she gets +7/+7, and maybe you just try to go Voltron with her.
Just hit with a 10/10 for 3. I mean, the stats are good on that.
You need to give her evasion too, so it's like kind of a pain to do that.
What about, I guess if you, there's equipment that double up on triggered abilities, right? Or is there an equipment that doubles up on triggered abilities, or is it just activated? If you have an artifact with an activated or triggered ability, and normally you would have less options for copying that, but if, say, you had like an Illusionist Bracers or something, then you get the extra copy off of it. Well, not for free, because you had to pay to equip the bracers, but that was kind of what I was thinking.
Okay, all right. That, there might be something there. Maybe, oh, okay. All right. I think we're cooking. Hold on. If there's any like artifact out there that's like tap, untap target permanent, and then you could slap a bracers on her, and then you could have her untap, like tap to untap herself and untap something else and get like infinite untaps. Let's just see if how many cards there are that like meet that criteria.
Sadly, she herself is not an artifact creature. Otherwise, I'd say something like Voltaiki or something.
Yeah. Yeah, not really seeing a ton of options here.
Idris is one of those cards that I look at it and I'm like, surely there's some weird interaction that could make this good. And then I just don't see it. I just can't find it.
Yeah, let's give a bounty to our listeners. Anyone who is able to find some really sweet tech for Idris, please let us know and we'll share it on the show. But with that, I think we can perhaps move on to our next commander. Do you want to read this off?
Perhaps my favorite or second favorite commander in the entire set. River Song is a 2/2 that costs 1, a blue, and a red. It's a legendary creature, human Time Lord Rogue, and she has Meet in Reverse. You draw cards from the bottom of your library rather than the top. And spoilers, whenever an opponent scries, surveils, or searches their library, put a +1/+1 counter on River Song, then River Song deals damage to that player equal to its power.
Of course I saw this, and the first things that came to mind were the combo potential. So there is a one card combo in this deck with Time Stream Navigator. Time Stream Navigator is 1 blue for a 1/1 with Ascend. So if you control 10 or more permanents, you get the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. And it has 2 blue tap, put Time Stream Navigator on the bottom of its owner's library. Take an extra turn after this one. Activate only if you have the City's Blessing. So with that, you can just activate it while River Song is out. You get to take an extra turn. And then because you're drawing from the bottom of your deck, during the draw step of that new turn, you're going to get the Time Stream Navigator. So provided you have like a haste granter, then you can just take infinite turns really easily. You might need some way to try to win from there. Hopefully, maybe you can grant evasion to your River Song and just blink in for 2 points at a time. But seems very strong. Another potential combo engine is using the many cards that can repeatedly put a card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library, like Rato Lantern, for instance. There's maybe about like 8 to 10 of those types of effects. But if you keep doing that with an extra turn effect, then you get kind of the same thing. You cast your Time Warp, put them on the bottom of your library. During that next turn, you draw the Time Warp again, and just keep going from there. You just need any kind of win condition when you have infinite untaps. So that seems pretty strong. That's probably like the first things I would put into a River Song deck. But what do you think about this commander?
Unfortunately, I think you're right that those are the strongest things. I am sad about it because I personally don't play extra turns in my deck so I can ever avoid it due to essentially agreements in my play group and past stuff. It's just like the one faux pas that we don't particularly care for. However, I can't let that not make me love how wonky it is and how perfectly in flavor it is for River to draw cards from the bottom. I think that one of the first cards I ran into when I started playing Magic was Khosi's Trickster. So one mana, 1/1 Merfolk from original Zendikar that whenever an opponent shuffles their library, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. And that card has always like stuck with me to this day. And River kind of does that on the bottom end. Outside of building around the first ability with the things that you've already talked about, if you wanted to build into the second ability, there are cards that exist which make people shuffle their library, make everybody shuffle their library. Like I think Soldier of Fortune is one of them. Or make everybody scry, that kind of thing. It certainly will not be as good as taking a bajillion turns, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Seems like a very neat commander overall. It's hard for me to get excited about spoilers just because like it's relatively difficult to control. But I think with that, we can move on. Next, we've got Jenny, Generated Anomaly. 2 red-white for a 2/3 legendary creature, Time Lord Soldier with double strike. Whenever Jenny deals combat damage to a player, it explores. And as a reminder, to explore, you reveal the top card of your library, put it into your hand if it's a land. Otherwise, put a +1/+1 counter on Jenny, and then you can choose to either put the card back on top or put it into your graveyard. What do you think about Jenny?
I actually really like this card. Originally, when I looked at it, I wasn't really sure where to go with it. And I really like Explore as a mechanic. I love putting cards into my graveyard to use later. I like drawing the land out of the way if I need to. There's just a lot of modality to it, whether or not you get the counter. But then somebody pointed out that it would make an interesting white-red landfall deck. And I've now just been kind of like stuck on that in my brain. Just the idea of like setting her up with some haste, maybe some flying or some sort of evasion, and then just farming landfall triggers by smacking people and exploring and things of that nature. I don't think she's particularly powerful, but I think she's really cool.
I think if you were trying to do sort of like red, white, Voltron, there's just better options. You've got like Bruce Tarl. There's other cards like for the same mana cost that have like double strike and slightly more power. Although Jenny, you could potentially grow with your exploration. If you can keep her around for a while, then that will definitely surpass those other cards I mentioned. When I see a card like this, okay, I'll throw in some like combat damage trigger type effects, like Mask of Memory or whatever, Professional Facebreaker. I'm not too excited. I think we can move on if you're ready.
The next one is Alistair, the Brigadier. It is 1 green-white-blue for a 3/3 legendary creature, human soldier. Whenever you cast a historic spell, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token. And as a reminder, historic spells are artifacts, legendaries, and sagas. And whenever Alistair attacks, you may pay 8. If you do, creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn. X is the number of historic permanents you control. What do you think about Alistair?
I'm not incredibly high on him. I mean, there's some things you can do to try to farm soldiers. Like maybe you could have like a Cloudstone Curio and a couple of cheap legends and try to just loop them like that. Or you could potentially try to do something with like Mirror Retriever and Workshop Assistant or Junk Diver, that kind of thing. But it's not like an incredible reward. I feel like the attack trigger, like paying 8 mana. I don't know if I'm ever going to do that. Like, In this color identity, I can paint 8 mana for like a Crater Hoof or a Moonshaker Cavalry, and those are going to win the game more effectively than like counting up the number of like mana rocks I have on the battlefield. How do you feel about Alistair?
I think you're right, predominantly. For me, Alistair reads as maybe a artifact creature commander, where you play a bunch of artifact creatures and legends that care about them, and make a bunch of tokens. And then if for whatever reason you haven't drawn into a way to Crater Hoof or Moonshaker or whatever, you probably will get enough plus out of plus X to kill one or two players if you need to pay the 8 for that. But that's pretty much your whole turn. And that's about it. It seems pretty weak to board wipes, so you'll include the usual collection of protection spells for board wipes and call it a day.
Definitely agree there. And I think we can move on to something that's a little bit more compelling. Ashad, the Lone Cyberman, is 1BR for a 3/3 legendary artifact creature, Cyberman. The first non-legendary artifact spell you cast each turn has casualty 2. And whenever you sacrifice another creature, put a +1/+1 counter on Ashad, the Lone Cyberman. So as a reminder, casualty means, or rather casualty 2 means, as you cast that first non-legendary artifact spell, you may sacrifice a creature with power 2 or greater. When you do, copy it, and then a copy of an artifact spell becomes a token. So this seems like a fun commander. I don't think it's too difficult to find artifact creatures that are worth copying and have 2 or more power. We've got a link to a list in the episode description. The things it is accomplishing are not as powerful as Anhelo, which is the casualty commander from the Streets of New Capenna precons. But I just like that the sort of 2 requirements of the card can potentially synergize with each other. Like with Anhelo, you need the sac fodder and then you need the spells to copy. And most of the time, those 2 didn't really overlap because you didn't really want to copy most of your token generations effects. Whereas with Ashad, you know, you can run Solemn Simulacrum or whatever, and it's decent to copy and great to sacrifice. I like him a bit more for that. There's certainly a lot of powerful artifact creatures to, and artifacts in general, I guess, to copy here. One of the sweetest ones is like Twinning Staff, which is 3 mana for an artifact. If you would copy a spell 1 or more times, instead copy it that many times plus an additional time, you may choose new targets for the additional copy. That's great to copy if your deck is all about copying things.
You go from 2 things to 4 things.
Yeah, seems awesome.
So I did a lot of brewing around Anhelo whenever he first came out, and ultimately found the deck to be unfulfilling to play because of what you said, the overlap between needing the 2 power guys and having the spells you want to copy. If you didn't have like 1 or 2 specific cards, it just didn't really work out, and it kind of fell flat for me.
Yeah, it's hard to get the numbers right.
And so when I saw this card, I kind of was just like, oh, another one like that. But hearing you talk about it and like realizing that he solves the overlap issue by the fact that he is copying artifacts instead, I actually see this guy in a new light. I think he's a lot better than I gave him credit for.
Definitely recommend checking out the list in the episode description for anyone who's curious. I'm just going to highlight like 1 or 2 more cards that I think are really fun. So Chaos Defiler is one of my favorite cards out of the 40K precons, and it's amazing here. It's 3BR for a 5/4 artifact creature demon construct with trample. And then when it enters the battlefield or dies, for each opponent, choose a non-land permanent that player controls. Destroy one of them chosen at random. So it's great to copy. You get to destroy another permanent at random. And then it's really great as sac fodder. It meets your casualty 2 threshold. And it has like another really powerful death trigger. Panharmonicon is great. If you've got a lot of artifacts with ETB triggers, then you can copy your Panharmonicon with Ashad and then, you know, copy like your Necron Deathmark or Noxious Gear Hulk or whatever, your duplicate Dalek Drone. So, and then just get like a million triggers off of all these things.
Calm down there, Nick. You're You're really sending me here. You're going to make me want to build this deck.
It seems cool. It seems cool.
The more you talk about it, the more I'm just like, wow, how did I not think about this?
Okay. We've got a lot of more commanders to cover, so I don't want to spend too much time here, but it's one of the most exciting ones to brew for me personally. And I think a lot of people are going to have fun with it.
I think that I'm going to start brewing with it.
All right. Do you want to read off the next commander?
All right, so we have another Dalek-centric card. This is Davros, Dalek Creator. 1BR for a 3/4 legendary artifact creature, alien scientist. He's got Menace, and at the beginning of your end step, create a 3/3 black Dalek artifact creature token with Menace. If an opponent lost 3 or more life this turn, then each opponent who lost 3 or more life this turn faces a villainous choice. You draw a card or they discard a card.
Personally, if I'm trying to like force my opponent to make villainous choices, then I would probably rather do it with the Dalek Emperor. I think that one's just easier to build around, less restrictive, you know, has more upside with this.
It's more unforgiving for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering, like, you definitely, you know, want ways to make sure that each opponent is losing 3 or more life a turn. So like Loyal Subordinate is one decent option. Loyal Subordinate, of course, being the 3-mana 3/1 zombie with Menace and has Lieutenant at the beginning of combat on your turn. If you control your commander, each opponent loses 3 life. There's a couple other cards like that that can just deal the 3 damage. I was wondering if this is like a Dragon's Approach deck, because it just guarantees that you're going to get your trigger. And, you know, Dragon's Approach by itself is, of course, not very powerful. But if Dragon's Approach is like getting you a Dalek and also making each of your opponents like either make you draw a card or they discard a card, like then that's becomes enough value for me to start getting excited about it. The only tricky part is that you're only doing this once per turn. So you've got to be very careful and mindful about how many Dragon's Approaches you really want to include in your deck. Definitely use the hypergeometric calculator for this one, because I don't think this deck is trying to cast a million Dragon's Approaches.
It's not like... I have a Dragon's Approach deck myself with the Vampire from Crimson Vow. Florian Voldaren Scion, he's a first striking 3/3 for 3, and at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, you look at the top hex cards of your library where X is the amount of life your opponent's lost this turn, exile the card, you can play it that turn. So like the pattern of the deck is main phase 1, Dragon's Approach them. Main phase 2, I look at 9 cards, find another Dragon's Approach, blast them again. Mm-hmm. So on and so forth. So it's definitely not that type of deck, I don't think.
Yeah. So I would definitely use the hypergeometric calculator and to figure out how many Dragon's Approaches you're trying to do. Again, it's not the best way to accomplish this, but I think you just really want to definitely get your thing going each turn. You could also just run, I guess, like 3 power evasive creatures. Like there is that one Dalek that's like 3 cost 3/3 with Menace and Myriad, so that might be another direction. You also like really want to make sure that you're able to protect Davros, because he's only doing his thing once each turn, and you want to get that trigger every single turn, otherwise your commander just doesn't accomplish much.
I think on the bright side, he's not particularly threatening. Like if I was at a table and one person had this commander, I don't think I'd care that much if this commander sat out.
Yeah.
Compared to like other commanders that are out there.
Yeah.
So the way Villainous Choice works is they always get to choose either option, even if it does nothing.
So if they have no cards in hand, they can just choose that option.
You just don't do anything.
Okay. Well, very disappointing there. Let's move on to the next Villainous Choice commander.
Yeah.
We've got Missy. She is 3BR for a 4/5 legendary creature Time Lord Rogue. Whenever another non-artifact creature dies, return it to the battlefield under your control face down and tapped. It's a 2/2 Cyberman artifact creature. And at the beginning of your end step, each opponent faces a Villainous Choice. Each artifact you control deals one damage to that opponent, or you draw a card and chaos ensues. Chaos ensues is, of course, only relevant to plane chase, so don't worry about that if you're not playing with planes.
That's what, if you control the chaos, you roll the chaos marker on your turn, so you get the special ability from the plane?
Exactly.
Is that what the game is?
Yeah.
Okay. I've only played plane chase. Well, I used to play it quite a bit a long time ago. We used to do like the planar map version where you like slowly create a map of the planes and you can go back and forth.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, it's definitely a neat thing if you want to add an hour to your commander gameplay. So for me, the first thing to note is they didn't write it here, but this is actually the master. So yet another master indeed. That said, I actually really like this. Six mana is a bit expensive, but I love the when a non-artifact creature dies, you get it back under your control. I think that the same things that you would want to do with the cyber controller guy that made the face down 2/2s from your opponent's decks, you'd probably want here. I think that this is probably one of the better villainous choices because it's just a bunch of damage or you draw a card. So some browbeating.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's going to be pretty easy to make the damage number high enough that plenty of players, even ones who don't care about their life total, will probably just let you draw a card because life total is a resource. And I find that most players who don't care as much about their life total secretly do care because they want to spend it on their own stuff.
very true. If my opponents keep burning the hell out of me, then how am I gonna spend a bunch of life on a fire covenant?
Exactly.
I think Missy, in addition to being sort of like a neat value engine, is also like pretty powerful combo commander. So there are a couple of morph cards with free morph costs. So I'm thinking...
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So there was a cycle of them in Khans of Tarkir, which means there's at least three of them in your color identity. And some of them like just kind of provide a win condition on their own. So like Ruthless Ripper, for example, it is a single black mana for a 1/1 human assassin with death touch. It has morph, reveal a black card in your hand. And then when it's turned face up, target player loses 2 life. So you have this on the battlefield. You sacrifice it to any sac outlet. Missy's going to return it to the battlefield face down as a Cyberman. And then you can reveal a black card in your hand, turn it face up. Somebody loses 2 life. You're basically back where you started, except somebody has lost 2 life. So you can just do that as many times as you want. Get infinite of whatever your sac outlet is producing. Make an opponent lose infinite life. Make all your opponents lose infinite life, really. So that is potentially a win condition for the deck. You can also run the other two free morphers in this color identity.
For infinite sac outlet.
Yeah,
fodder.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I forgot that she does your own creatures, so you can actually play morph guys in your deck and know that you can flip them up and stuff.
Yeah, and also like there's neat stuff to do with the fact that she is making your opponent's creature Cybermen as well. So like if you have an attrition, you can sacrifice like any other creature you control to kill an opponent's creature. It's going to come under your control face down as a Cyberman. You can sacrifice that Cyberman to target another one of your opponent's creatures and so on and so forth. As long as you have the black mana for attrition, you just machine gun down all of your opponent's creatures, which seems fairly strong. So I think she does a lot. She is expensive at 6 mana, but I mean, damn, she can really clean out your opponent's creatures really well and potentially win you the game.
Yeah, I definitely think, so she's a 6 drop, but I definitely think you play this when you've got more mana than 6 up so that you can interact and make sure you keep her safe because 6 mana is a lot, but I think they're actually giving you enough power here for your 6 mana. So,
yeah, agreed. Do you want to move on to the next commander?
The next one is one of my favorite set of characters of the villains. This is the Cult of Skaro. It is one blue, black, red for a 4/4 legendary artifact creature Dalek. And whenever Cult of Skaro attacks, choose one at random. They put a +1/+1 counter on each artifact creature you control. Con, draw two cards. Sek, create a 3/3 black Dalek artifact creature token with menace. And Jost, each opponent loses 4 life. Because the triggers at random, like, you can't really build around it other than trying to get a bunch of combat triggers. You have red for that, so that's cool. Maybe you can copy the triggered ability with some stuff. The flavor of the card is great because it's this like small cadre of rogue Daleks that are all really quirky and kind of separate from the normal Dalek vibe. But not really anything in particular here that makes me go, this is a commander I want to build around if I am not just like thinking about them as a character.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, my commander acting completely at random makes it really difficult for me to do anything with this. I don't find this super compelling. There's just so many other commanders in this villainous deck that I would way rather build around. If you're trying to do like Dalek Tribal, there's better options. So, or Dalek Typal. But I think we can move on. I'm happy to read off the next one if you're ready to go.
I'm ready.
All right. We've got the Veil Yard. 2 blue, black, red for a 4/5 legendary creature, Time Lord Noble. If an opponent would face a villainous choice, they face that choice an additional time. And while voting, you may vote an additional time. So just for your awareness, if you're not playing Plane Chase, then there are only 10 cards in this color identity that vote and 11 cards that make your opponents face a villainous choice. So, and of course, like some of those are just like not good. I don't think you actually want to run all 21 of those options because some of them are just like worthless or are not worth the cost. So it's going to be pretty difficult to fill out this deck. I think your commander only interacts with like a handful or two of cards in your deck, and then you just don't have really any other direction to build around. What do you think about the Veilyard?
I mean, I agree. I don't have anything to say about the Veilyard other than to say that I set him aside with the other voting-related commanders because I think over time, we're only going to get more voting stuff. And someday, maybe 3 years from now, maybe 5, maybe 10, those voting commanders will be fun choices.
Yeah.
Assuming they haven't printed just a power cut version of them by that point.
That's true. So they, in March of the Machines, in the like set booster exclusive, there was a cycle of voting cards. We, of course, just did have a voting precon in the Lord of the Rings set. So you're right. This could, over time, become more useful. As it is right now, it's just really like you could. Assuming you're running all of the good cards that meet these criteria, you could still just play games where you don't see any of them unless you're like tutoring them out. Like there's just not
explicitly
enough.
Searching them up. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I am happy to move on to the next one. You want to read this off?
Yes. So this is Me the Immortal. They are 2 green, blue, red for a 3/3 legendary creature, human rogue. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put your choice of a +1/+1 first strike, vigilance, or menace counter on Me the Immortal. Counters remain on Me as it moves to any zone other than a player's hand or library. And you may cast Me from your graveyard by discarding 2 cards in addition to paying its other costs. Yeah, this is actually getting a lot of attention. I guess there was a hunger for it. What do you think? What's going on? in Nick's head.
So I like it a bit more than Skullbriar because it is giving you a lot of, it's doing more than just increasing its power and toughness. You can do that if you want to, but I mean, some of these counters are more valuable than others. It still doesn't have like great evasion. I would have really appreciated, say, like a trample counter.
Oh man, or a flying. Could you imagine?
Even like haste would be a huge deal.
Oh yeah, haste. I mean, I think that's one of the things that Skullbriar has over this card is that it's 2 mana with haste, and so you just kind of get going really fast.
There's some negative qualities of this card. It is nice that you can cast it from your graveyard. So even though it is initially a lot more expensive than Skullbriar, like if your opponents are able to keep killing Skullbriar, like this could potentially become cheaper than it in the long run. Mm-hmm. This is still a little bit of a weird color identity for this effect.
You think so?
What I'm thinking is like blue and red don't add a ton of +1/+1 counters to things. This ability definitely wants to be green, so it's good they kept that through line from Skullbriar. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you can throw a flying counter on it with like a few cards from Ikoria.
There's the one where you convoke and you get a flying counter on the creatures you convoke with too.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a handful of ways to do that. I think like Avian Oddity is the card that like cycles and puts a flying counter on something.
Yes, it is, yeah. There's the red for a double strike counter.
Okay, that's pretty sweet. Then I think you can definitely put a trample counter on it with some of the green cards from Ikoria. Okay, you can play around with this a bit.
The red in particular, I think, doesn't play too much into it, but I think the blue actually gives you a decent amount because there's blue cards that are like creatures with counters are unblockable and draw you cards and things of that nature in blue, or at least in Simic that you can kind of fall back on.
Sure. I think this card would be like totally fine if it costs 1 less mana. I think 5 is a bit much for what it's doing.
I think if it had haste, 5 would be the right price, but without haste, I think 4 is the right price.
Yeah, because like really all you can do with it is Voltron, and it's tough to start off playing your Voltron commander on turn 5 with no haste. That's a bit rough. I think I'm ready to move on to the next commander if you are.
All right, read off the Rani.
The Rani is 1 black, blue, red for a 3/4 legendary creature, Time Lord Scientist. Whenever the Rani enters the battlefield or attacks, create a red aura enchantment token named Mark of the Rani, attached to another target creature. That token has enchant creature, and enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and is goaded. Whenever a goaded creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, investigate. How do you feel about the Rani?
I feel that adding black and making it cost 1 less does not make it better than the dragon from Baldur's Gate, Furcrag.
I agree with you there. Furcrag is just doing the exact same thing, but better. Investigating is worse than just straight drawing cards. Furcrag also has like some neat dragon synergies.
And he grows. He gets +1/+1 counters too, so he just becomes a massive flyer over time.
So I don't really know why you would choose this commander over that one.
Flavor, probably.
Do you have any last thoughts on the Rani, or do you want to move on to the next commander?
My only thought is I always love to see aura enchantment tokens. Mm-hmm. I hope we see more of them. This particular one doesn't do anything for me, but I'm always down for that design space. All right, shall I read off the next one?
Go for it.
All right, so we've got Kate Stewart, daughter of Alistair, who we spoke about earlier. And she is 1 blue-red-white for a 3/3 legendary creature, human scientist. Whenever you put 1 or more time counters on a permanent you control, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token. And whenever she attacks, you may pay 8. If you do, attacking creatures get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of time counters among permanents you control. I think she's better than Alistair, but what do you think?
I don't know if she's better than Alistair. I just think that like time counters is such a weird thing. It's only really ever been put on cards in like Time Spiral Block. It seems really difficult to like trigger her or like build up a significant amount of time counters to get a like big anthem here.
Oh, wait, hold on. Counters. Oh, for some reason I was thinking, I even read the card and I still thought it applied to your suspended stuff.
No, yeah. It's pretty much yeah. like just vanishing or just like the random cards from this specific Doctor Who precon.
I take it back then. Her dad is better.
Yeah.
And that's not saying much.
I don't want to build around this. I don't think there's a lot of play here. I think if you're trying to do time counters, some of the doctor slash companion splits are better for that. This mm-hmm. is just like a really weird design to me. With that, perhaps we can move on to the last commander we're going to discuss today.
Yeah, and kind of a banger.
The Face of Bo is 1BR-WH for a 0/4 legendary creature alien advisor. He has tap. You may cast a spell with suspend from your hand. If you do, pay its suspend cost rather than its mana cost. Activate only as a sorcery. We have a list in the episode description if you want to take a look at it. What do you think about the Face of Bo?
I adore what this card is doing, and I think we'll get more suspend cards over time, and he will just get better. I think it's hilarious that you can cast the zero cost suspend cards for their cheap price. And I know you won't get to do that very often, but it's going to be funny every time you do it. You're going to feel good and smart when you do that. But otherwise, the deck probably needs spell tutors and stuff to make sure you get the spells you want to cast. Maybe a way to untap them. It's another 1,000-year elixir deck for sure.
I would hope that we see more suspend cards over time, because right now it's a little tough to build this deck. There's maybe like 50-ish cards with suspend in this color identity. A lot of them are just things that even if you're casting them for their suspend cost, you just don't want to be doing in Commander. Like there are 2/2s with flying and flanking. Like, okay, it's cool that I can spend a single mana to get that, but that is not going to make me run it in Commander. In the deck list that we linked in the episode description, I'm running basically all the ones you would be excited to cast, and it's still like not an extremely high density. And honestly, some of those decisions are like a little questionable. For say like Mox Tantalite, is it worth tapping your Commander to get this zero cost mana rock? I don't know. It's not incredibly powerful. And like Soul Talisman, okay, maybe on turn 5, I would still be stoked to get a Soul Ring.
Yeah, I've never been sad to see a Soul Ring on turn 5.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, you are like tapping your commander and choosing to do that instead of doing something else.
Yeah. That's why I think like you'd need some ways to untap them probably, but
yeah, you can run like a Minimo School at Water's Edge in your mana base. You can, there's a couple other cards like that. I think that like it's going to take a little more time and some more cards with suspend before he really pops off.
I will be honest, when I first saw this card, I was like blown away with the novelty. And then I thought about it and was like, okay, it's not really that particularly powerful or good, but it's still very novel. And then I was a little bit sad because after I saw the full set, we didn't actually get him in his prior human form as a card.
I didn't even realize this was ever a human. It's like the head is enormous and it's got like weird alien tendrils coming off of it. You want to share some of the like lore behind this guy?
The Face of Bo appears to be a male Bo kind, but is actually just like a mutated and grown humanoid head. If you recall earlier on in the show, we're introduced to Jack Harkness.
He's like kind of an American action hero type.
Yeah, American action hero, a little bit of a roguish character. He was pretty big in like the first couple seasons. And the twist with him is that he is immortal and eventually becomes the Face of Bo after he essentially changes himself over time so that he can deliver a very important message to the 10th Doctor at some point. The Face of Bo is really cool, but I really like Jack Harkness as a character, and I think he'd have made a really neat card with all of his like tricky roguishness and his very like Han Solo energy. So Kind of sad that he didn't get a card as well, since a lot of other characters got multiple iterations.
Aside from Jack Harkness, is there any other characters that you wish you'd seen show up in this set of Precon?
Not really. They really went deep and they cut across most of the things that I knew and that I was hoping to see. As far as characters, though, I think Harkness is probably the biggest miss for me. I can't really think of anybody else.
Hopefully, we may see more similar products in the future. If this is a big success, like, there's enough stories to tell to come back to Doctor Who at some point, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Overall, how do you feel about the many, many new legendary creatures that Doctor Who is bringing to the game?
I really appreciate how much new space they tried to mine. They didn't hit every single time they tried to mine new space, but I feel like they've added a ton of commander options here. And between these commanders we talked about today and the ones that you talked about on your last episode, there's just a huge array of new decks that will emerge in the next couple of years out of these. And I'm excited that they are willing to take these branching chances, which part of it's because it's top down, but part of it is just because I have been paying attention and it seems like there is a change in the overall philosophy that studio has been taking with their commander designs of late.
There's enough bangers coming out of this crop that I don't mind the number of misses. The only major criticism I have is, like, wow, is it disappointing that Villainous Choice works the way it does?
Oh gosh, right?
Yeah, I think that's the only huge problem I have with this product overall. But yeah, so many of these commanders look fun to play with. There's just new archetypes being opened up with this set. And I am really stoked to build around a lot of these commanders.
This year's been kind of dry for me as far as building new commanders. And suddenly now I'm just like, oh, maybe I want to build some commanders.
Yeah, I know. My wallet's about to get a little light. But that brings us to the end of the episode. Do you have any social media you'd like to share if anyone wants to reach out and talk about commanders some more?
No, I'm not really on social media as much anymore, but if you do join the Patreon for Commander Theory, I am on the Discord as DNA and will be happy to chat with you about Commander.
Okay. Thanks for the plug, Ben, and really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun to talk about all these legends with you.
Yeah, it's been a great time. Thanks for having me.
You can reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Commander Theory.
And on Twitter, I am at Fat Bartleby.
You can also email us at commandertheory@gmail.com. Our theme song is Lincoln Continental by Nick Cage. You can check him out on SoundCloud.
And if you're interested in some other creative products I'm working on, I have a band you can check out. We are a pink punk, pop punk band called The Have Nots, all one word, like cosmonauts. You can listen to all of our music for free right now. You can just head over to thehavenots.bandcamp.com. That is thehavenauts.bandcamp.com. And check us out. Let me know what you think.